there is new hope for Syria.
I think it's important to say that there is a lot of hope that we can now see the beginning of a new Syria.
Congress is rushing to protect kids on social media.
It is about choice, giving young people choice and their parents safeguards, tools to protect their children.
And anti-LGBTQ plus legislation in Ghana appears to be moving forward.
We respect the decision of the court, but we respectfully disagree with it. We think the outcome could have been different.
Today is Thursday, December 19th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Alexis Strobe. We begin in Syria, where some see new hope for the future of the country. The head of the Syrian National Coalition that grouped opponents of Bashar al-Assad during the civil war, Hadi al-Barra, said on Wednesday that Syria's transitional government should be credible and inclusive, as the United Nations Special Envoy to the country expressed hope for a new Syria. Reuters correspondent Diane Tao reports.
The head of the Syrian National Coalition called on Wednesday for credible transitional government for the country. Hadi al-Barra, who leads the coalition that grouped opponents of Bashar al-Assad during the civil war, was speaking to reporters at a briefing in Turkey. He said the government should also not exclude any Syrian party or be based on sectarianism.
So I call on all of you to support the current caretaker government in Syria, which is supposed to finish its duties by the beginning of March. Then after March, a transitional government will be formed with the accord of Syrians.
In a seismic moment for the Middle East, Syrian rebels seized control of Damascus on December the 8th, forcing Assad to flee after more than 13 years of civil war and ending his family's decades-long rule. The lightning offensive raised questions over whether the rebels will be able to ensure an orderly transition. Al-Barra said his group had not met rebel leader Ahmed al-Shara, better known as Abu Muhammad al-Gulani, but he said they had communications with the caretaker government and parties close to al-Shara. The United Nations Special Envoy to Syria echoed calls for an inclusive administration as he left Damascus on Wednesday. Geir Pedersen had been in the capital city since Sunday for talks aimed at addressing the challenges facing the war-torn country.
It's early days, but I think it's important to say that there is a lot of hope that we can now see the beginning of a new Syria. A new Syria that, in line with Security Council Resolution 2254, will adopt a new constitution that will ensure that it is a social contract, a new social contract for all Syrians.
Pedersen also said the UN has offered the new leaders help, adding that the country needs immediate humanitarian assistance.
That was Reuters correspondent Diane Tao. On to Russia, where on Wednesday, officials claimed to have detained a citizen in Uzbekistan who had confessed to planting and detonating a bomb that killed Lieutenant General Igor Kirillov in Moscow a day earlier on the instructions of Ukraine's security service. Russian Investigative Committee Representative Svetlana Petrenko issued a video statement detailing what Russia says were the actions of the suspect. She says, to monitor Kirillov's place of residence, the suspect rented a car-share car and installed a video camera in it. The footage from it was broadcast online to the city of Dnipro by the organizer of the terrorist attack. After the suspect received a signal of Kirillov leaving the house, he remotely detonated the explosive device. For this crime, the suspect was guaranteed a cash reward of $100,000 and a residency in a European country. Other people involved in the organization of this crime are being identified. Kirillov, who was the chief of Russia's nuclear, biological, and chemical protection troops, was the most senior Russian military officer to be assassinated inside Russia by Ukraine. Ukraine's SBU intelligence service, which accused Kirillov of being responsible for the use of chemical weapons against Ukrainian troops, something Moscow denies, took responsibility for the killing. Russia's investigative committee, which probes serious crimes, said in a statement Wednesday that the unnamed suspect had told them he came to Moscow to carry out an assignment for Ukraine's intelligence services. Meanwhile, Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky is in Brussels for the EU Western Balkans summit to talk with allies about the future of Ukraine's security. VOA's Anna Chernikova has this report.
President Volodymyr Zelensky is in Brussels to participate in the EU Western Balkans summit. On Wednesday, the Ukrainian president met with French President Emmanuel Macron and NATO chief Mark Rutte. Zelensky said that the meeting with NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte and other EU leaders is a good opportunity to talk about security guarantees for Ukraine for today and tomorrow. Zelensky noted that the messages that were discussed on Wednesday will also be discussed with all EU leaders on Thursday.
And I think it's a very good opportunity to speak about security guarantees for Ukraine for today and for tomorrow, as you said.
NATO Secretary General Mark Rutte said that the talks would mainly be about strengthening Ukraine now, so that Ukraine is in the most advantageous position when the time comes for peace talks with Russia. Rutte also noted that when peace comes, it will also be important to think about Ukraine's economy and not only buy weapons for Ukraine, but also buy weapons from Ukraine.
Very much high on the agenda is to make sure that the president, his team, Ukraine are in the best possible position one day when they decide so to start the peace talks. And that means that we have to do everything now to make sure that when it comes to air defense, when it comes to other weapon systems, that we make sure that we provide whatever we can.
Zelensky confirmed he will also meet with other European leaders, the President of the European Council and the President of the European Commission. He said Europe needs a strong position for long-term peace, and that ending Russia's war against Ukraine is an issue that should be resolved by coordinated and effective work of European countries. On Tuesday, Zelensky met with Polish Prime Minister Donald Tusk. During the joint press conference, Zelensky mentioned that after Donald Trump's inauguration, a lot of effort will be made to end the war between Russia and Ukraine, and that the whole European region must ensure that the peace is long-term and the region is protected from any potential future threats.
Після інаугурації президента Трампа, очевидно,
Зеленський thanked the Polish government and people for all the support provided for Ukraine and said that during next year's Polish presidency of the Council of the European Union, Ukraine will work hard and cooperate with the Polish side to strengthen Ukraine's position in the EU accession negotiations. Meanwhile, Russian local news channels reported explosions in the Rostov region in Russia in the early hours of Wednesday. Reportedly, it was a drone attack on the city of Rostov. No official reaction from either Russian or Ukrainian officials was provided. However, Rostov local authorities reported a missile attack allegedly by at least 10 missiles that caused the destructions in the region. According to acting governor Yuri Slusar, several residential buildings in the region were damaged as a result of falling debris. According to preliminary data, no casualties were reported. Slusar had previously warned residents about possible attacks on military facilities in the region. The Ukrainian officials did not comment on the allegation. VOA cannot verify this information independently. Anna Chernikova, VOA News, Kyiv.
With victory for Ukraine uncertain, U.S. funding for Ukraine's military in question, and the incoming Trump administration, VOA Ukrainians Yulia Yarmolenko talked with Michael Carpenter from the National Security Council about the latest in the U.S. effort to support Ukraine.
In September, we were talking about Ukraine's victory plan, and now it seems like the conversation is moving towards the negotiation process. Do you think the victory of Ukraine is still possible, and is there something that the Biden administration can still do to help Ukraine achieve that goal?
I do. I do think victory is possible. I think Ukraine must prevail. I think for the good of the international order, for the good of security in Europe, and for the good of all those brave Ukrainians that are fighting for their freedom, it must prevail. The question is, what can we do now to set Ukraine up to be in a position of strength? It's going to take a dedicated effort of providing additional security assistance in order to stabilize the lines, and it's going to take a range of other efforts, including macro-financial assistance, humanitarian support, support for the energy sector. But this is underway. And this administration, although it only has a month left in office, will continue to surge the support, and it will spend every penny, every dollar of security assistance that has been authorized for Ukraine will be obligated by the end of this year.
But is there enough time? Pentagon yesterday said that they might not be able to use every dollar, every penny of remaining funding to provide security assistance to Ukraine.
Oh, they will. They will. Now, some of that security assistance is on contract, so some of it will not arrive until 2025. But all of the money will be spent down by January 20th, I assure you.
Why do you think Pentagon is signaling that they might not be able to have this time?
They will. So we have talked to our partners at the Department of Defense. We have a plan for spending down all of the presidential drawdown authority and all of the monies that have been obligated through the Ukraine Security Assistance Initiative. Those are the two main pots of money, along with the foreign military financing. So that may be a little bit too technical for your viewers, but through all those different pots of money, we will spend it by January 20th.
Air defense continues to be the biggest issue probably right now for Ukrainian civilians. So in that remaining time, will the air defense be prioritized in order to give Ukrainian civilians some kind of protection?
Yeah, of all the capabilities that Ukraine needs, air defense is the most important one, because this goes to the protection of cities, which Russia has been targeting relentlessly with its drones, cruise missiles, and ballistic missiles, including the Oreshnik, and then also for critical infrastructure. It's really important to have, maybe not always Patriots, but a smaller version of an air defense system, point-to-point air defense, to protect some of the key infrastructure in Ukraine. So that is absolutely the priority. Here's the problem. The problem is that a lot of our partners and allies have dug so deep into their own stocks that they don't have a whole lot left to give. So we are demarching our partners, talking with all of our allies, seeing what else we can possibly get in advance of the winter to give Ukraine the air defense that it needs.
President-elect Trump and his team, they talk about ending the war in 24 hours, and they also say that they are in a constant conversation and they're coordinating their work with the current administration. Is there a consensus between the two teams about the need for a just peace in Ukraine, not just for an end of fighting?
So I can't speak for the Trump administration that's coming into office soon. You'll have to ask them for their views. What I can say is that in order for a negotiation to be successful, it has to be leveraged appropriately. And so Ukraine needs to be able to approach that negotiation from a position of strength, which first and foremost means stopping the erosion of the forward line of troops in the Donbas and at least stabilizing those lines, if not reversing the momentum. That's going to take some time. So it's going to take into 2025, and it's going to take resources. It's going to take additional security assistance in order for Ukraine to be able to do that. Now, look, the notion that the Russians are really strong right now is, I think, false. We have seen that as many as 600,000 Russian casualties have accumulated over the course of these 2.5 years of war. And the Russian economy, of course, inflation is picking up. Interest rates are at 21%, potentially even going higher. So Russia's not 10 feet tall. But that said, we will have to resource Ukraine in order for it to be able to prevail. And no matter what administration or what country you're in and what political party you affiliate with, that is an objective fact, that Ukraine will need to have the strength provided by resources to be able to approach Russia and have a negotiation where they can protect their sovereignty and independence.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate your time.
You're welcome.
That was VOA Ukrainian's Yulia Yarmolenko speaking with Michael Carpenter from the National Security Council. And here are some more stories we're following from around the world. The U.S. Supreme Court will hear arguments next month over the constitutionality of the federal law that could ban TikTok in the U.S. if its Chinese parent company doesn't sell it. The justices said Wednesday they will hear arguments January 10th about whether the law impermissibly restricts speech in violation of the First Amendment. The law, enacted in April, set a January 19th deadline for TikTok to be sold or else face a ban in the United States. It's unclear how quickly a decision might come. The justices could act after the arguments to keep the law from taking effect pending a final ruling. The parliament building in Liberia caught fire Wednesday, and the country's president condemned the wanton destruction. Even as no link was immediately confirmed to anti-government protests in the capital, the protests in the West African nation began with anger Tuesday over the decision to remove the parliament speaker, an opposition party member who faces accusations of corruption. The demonstrators are also calling for President Joseph Boakai to step down. Authorities did not immediately confirm the cause of the fire in the capital, Monrovia. The police chief did not rule out arson. Pakistani authorities have postponed a polio vaccination campaign in the country's restive southern Balochistan province after health workers boycotted it to oppose a proposed privatization of hospitals. Authorities on Monday launched the final nationwide polio vaccination campaign for the year, aimed to protect 45 million children. According to the World Health Organization, Pakistan and neighboring Afghanistan remain the only two countries where the potentially fatal paralyzing virus has not been eradicated. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Alexis Strope. A bipartisan effort to protect children from the harms of social media is running out of time in this session of the U.S. Congress. If passed, the Kids Online Safety Act would institute safeguards for minors' personal data online. But free speech advocates and some Republicans are concerned the bill could lead to censorship. VOA's congressional correspondent Katherine Gibson has more.
Social media is again under the spotlight on Capitol Hill. With just days left in this year's session, both Republican and Democratic Party senators are urging the House of Representatives to pass the Kids Online Safety Act. Republican Senator Marsha Blackburn.
We have laws in the physical space that protect children from the harms of alcohol, tobacco, firearms, protect them from cyberbullying, protect them from exposure to sexual exploitation or pornography. In the virtual space, we do not have those laws.
Blackburn is co-sponsor of the bill, the first legislation since 1998 that would provide online protections for minors. But House Speaker Mike Johnson, a Republican, says he's concerned the measure would limit free speech.
I think all of us, 100% of us, support the principle behind it, but you got to get this one right. When you're dealing with the regulation of free speech, you can't go too far and have it be overbroad.
And conservative groups seeking to limit the powers of government agree. Richard Manning is the president of Americans for Limited Government.
I don't trust government officials to arbitrate fairly, because they by design are political. And we've seen what happens when political people weaponize speech. And that is dangerous and it needs to be stopped. So we've got to come up with a better way of enforcing this and put some more guardrails in the enforcement.
Elon Musk, the owner of social media platform X, worked with lawmakers to address concerns about the legislation. Democratic co-sponsor Richard Blumenthal said earlier this month,
what we've clarified is that there's no censorship in this bill. There's no content moderation. There's no blocking of specific content. It is about choice, giving young people choice and their parents safeguards, tools to protect their children.
Tech companies Meta and Google oppose the bill. President-elect Donald Trump has not expressed an opinion on the issue, but his son, Donald Trump Jr., posted to X saying, quote, "We can protect free speech and our kids at the same time." Manning says the legislation being considered would not work in practice.
State attorney generals would have an opportunity to take whatever the guidelines were, the regulations put in place by the FTC. They would be able to then use those guidelines to determine speech within the context of their state. And you would eventually have 50 different internets in 50 different states.
An earlier version of the bill passed the Senate by a vote of 91-3. Supporters are encouraging the House to vote on the legislation before the end of the year. Katherine Gibson, VOA News, Washington.
Tropical cyclone Chido, which made landfall in Mozambique on Sunday, has so far killed 7 people in Malawi, affecting more than 30,000 others before it died down. Authorities in Malawi say assessment of the damage is ongoing. VOA Scott Walterman narrates this report by Lamech Messina.
A preliminary assessment report released Tuesday by Malawi's Department of Disaster Management Affairs says the cyclone that was later downgraded to a moderate tropical storm blew off the roofs of schools, health facilities, and houses in its path. Chipoliro Kumala is the department spokesperson.
So far, 7,721 households, and these are approximately 34,741 people, have been affected. The death toll has risen from 2 to 7. Salima has registered 3 deaths, while Kasungu, Majinga, Blantyre and Lilongwe districts have each recorded 1 death.
Kumala also said the department recorded 16 injuries. Cyclone Chido started northeast of Madagascar in the Indian Ocean and made landfall Sunday near Nacala in Mozambique, where it caused significant damages. The situation update from the UN Office of Coordination of Human Affairs, released Tuesday, says Chido also has affected more than 174,000 people in Mozambique and 64,000 in the Comoros Archipelago, destroying thousands of homes. Its remnants passed Malawi on Monday as a moderate tropical storm, causing heavy rains and flooding in about 17 districts, many of them in the south. Lucy Matia Tilla is the director for the Department of Climate Change and Meteorological Services in Malawi. She told VOA Tuesday the storm has receded.
Right now there is no threat because it has completely died down, so we don't take it again. If anything, our eyes are on the Indian Ocean, just maybe there will be another development. But so far, so good, there is no development there.
School classes have since resumed in Malawi after the government suspended them on Sunday as a precautionary measure ahead of the cyclone. Kamula, Malawi's Department of Disaster Management Affairs, says the agency has withdrawn all search and rescue teams that it deployed in the at-risk areas. Currently, he says, the department, in collaboration with other humanitarian partners, is facilitating relief efforts to assist affected households. For Lamech Messina in Malawi, I'm Scott Walterman, VOA News.
And finally, Ghana's Supreme Court on Wednesday dismissed 2 separate cases challenging the legality of one of Africa's most restrictive pieces of anti-LGBTQ plus legislation, paving the way for the president to sign it into law. Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo has the story.
Ghana's Supreme Court on Wednesday dismissed 2 separate cases challenging the legality of one of Africa's most restrictive pieces of anti-LGBT legislation. This decision paves the way for the president to sign the legislation into law. Abena Takiwo Manu, a senior fellow of the Accra Bay Center for Democratic Governance, was at the court.
Just this pronouncement, this kind of formalism, this resort to constitutionalism, actually put at risk the life and health of certain members of the community, and of course some of us who are human rights defenders.
The West African Nations Parliament unanimously approved the bill in February. It increases a crackdown on the rights of LGBT people and those promoting lesbian, gay or other non-conventional sexual or gender identities. However, President Nana Akufo-Addo delayed signing it, pending the challenges filed at the Supreme Court. Amanda Odoi and Richard Sky, both lawyers, filed separate challenges to the bill. They were seeking to declare it illegal and prevent the president from signing it. Lawyer Ernest Ack said he was disappointed by the ruling.
We respect the decision of the court, but we respectfully disagree with it. We think the outcome could have been different.
Before this legislation, gay sex in Ghana was already punishable by up to 3 years in prison. The bill now also imposes up to 5 years in prison for promoting, sponsoring or supporting LGBTQ plus activities. Despite a finance ministry warning about potential risks, supporters of the bill have been pushing for its promulgation. The ministry said it could jeopardize $3.8 billion in World Bank financing and derail a $3 billion IMF loan package meant to help Ghana out of an economic crisis.
That was Reuters correspondent Alice Rizzo reporting for us. And that'll wrap it up for today. This has been International Edition on the Voice of America. On behalf of everyone here at VOA, thank you for joining us. For pictures, stories, videos, and more, follow VOA News on your favorite social media platform and online at voanews.com. In Washington, I'm Alexis Strope. Thanks for listening.